Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Bankruptcy Jurisdiction Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 9, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Executive Benefits Insurance Agency v. Arkeson. This case presented two questions regarding the power of bankruptcy courts. First, does Article 3 of the Constitution permit bankruptcy courts to exercise the judicial power of the United States on the basis of litigant consent? And if so, can consent be implied by litigant conduct? The second question is whether a bankruptcy judge may submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law for de novo review by a district court in a core proceeding. In a unanimous opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, the court held that while, under the reasoning of Stern v. Marshall, the Constitution does not permit a bankruptcy court to enter final judgment on a bankruptcy-related claim, the relevant statute nevertheless permits a bankruptcy court to issue proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law to be reviewed de novo by the district court. Because this determination sufficed to affirm the judgment of the Ninth Circuit in this particular case, the court did not rule on the viability of litigant consent to jurisdiction. To discuss the case, we have Thomas Plank, who is the Joel A. Katz Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Tennessee College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Plank.
This case presented the court with the opportunity to resolve two issues arising out of the continuing controversy over the extent of the powers of bankruptcy courts under the United States Constitution. The larger issue was whether parties could consent to jurisdiction by a bankruptcy court, whether that consent may be implied, and what conduct would be sufficient to imply such consent. The smaller issue was the interpretation of the statutory provisions that differentiate core proceedings that could be adjudicated by bankruptcy courts from non-core proceedings that could only be adjudicated by United States district courts. In a unanimous decision by Justice Thomas, the court resolved the narrow but important issue of statutory interpretation and left the larger issues of consent to another day. Bankruptcy courts are not Article III courts created pursuant to Article III of the United States Constitution, and bankruptcy judges are not Article III judges appointed for life by the president. Instead, bankruptcy courts are created by Congress pursuant to its powers under Article I of the Constitution to enact laws on the subject of bankruptcies, and bankruptcy judges are appointed by the related United States Court of Appeals for 14-year terms. For hundreds of years, under the original English Bankrupt Acts and Insolvency Acts and state and federal bankruptcy laws, persons who were not, quote, judges in the full sense of the word, such as commissioners of bankrupt, justices of the peace, and referees, have exercised some adjudicatory powers on matters at the heart or the core of a bankruptcy case. These include questions like what is property of the estate, what are the debts owed to creditors, and whether a debtor is entitled to a discharge of debts. After these initial determinations, aggrieved parties could appeal to a court of general jurisdiction, such as the Lord Chancellor or common law judges in England, and Article III judges in the United States. And representatives of the bankruptcy estate often had to seek the assistance of a court of general jurisdiction to vindicate the initial adjudications by the bankruptcy non-judges. The Bankruptcy Code, enacted by Congress in 1978, greatly expanded the jurisdiction of bankruptcy courts. But in 1984, the Supreme Court held that Congress had given bankruptcy courts and judges more power than the Constitution permitted. In response that year, Congress bifurcated bankruptcy court proceedings into core proceedings and proceedings that are not core proceedings. Section 157B of Title 28 contains a list of 16 core proceedings in which bankruptcy courts may hear and determine the controversy and enter final orders subject only to appellate review. For proceedings that are not core proceedings, but that are related to the bankruptcy case, the bankruptcy court may hear the proceeding and submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law to a U.S. district court, but the district court reviews the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law de novo and enters final judgment, which is then subject to appeal to the Court of Appeals. In 2011, in Stern v. Marshall, the Supreme Court held that one of the enumerated core proceedings, a compulsory counterclaim filed by a debtor against a creditor, was an action at law within the meaning of the Constitution that could not be finally determined by a bankruptcy court. That decision left many unanswered questions, some of which were raised by Executive Benefits case before the court. The Executive Benefits case involves a proceeding to recover a fraudulent transfer. By statute, this is a core proceeding. But under Stern, there is a question of whether a bankruptcy court has the power to enter final judgment. Interestingly, however, the issue of whether Stern actually applies to a fraudulent transfer proceedings was not directly before the court. In Executive Benefits, before the Supreme Court had decided Stern v. Marshall, the debtor, Bellingham Insurance Agency, filed a bankruptcy petition to liquidate its assets. Before filing for bankruptcy, the debtor, which was insolvent at the time, had transferred property worth about $373,000 for no consideration to a newly formed corporation, Executive Benefits Insurance Agency, which is the petitioner in this case. The bankruptcy trustee sued Executive Benefits in bankruptcy court to recover the transfer as a fraudulent transfer under Section 548 of the Bankruptcy Code and also under applicable state law. The bankruptcy court entered summary judgment in favor of the trustee and entered a final judgment for about $373,000. Executive Benefits appealed to the United States District Court after a de novo review of the bankruptcy court's summary judgment ruling. The district court affirmed. The Executive Benefits then appealed to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Before oral argument, the Supreme Court rendered the Stern decision, and Executive Benefits then challenged the bankruptcy court's judgment under Stern. Addressing this issue and applying the logic of Stern, the Court of Appeals held that a bankruptcy court, because it was not an Article III court, could not adjudicate the fraudulent transfer proceeding, even though it was by statute a core proceeding. This ruling creates a prima facie gap in the statutory framework. The fraudulent transfer proceeding under Section 157B2H is a core proceeding, but it cannot constitutionally be determined by a bankruptcy court. The definition of non-core proceeding in Section 157C1 excludes core proceedings. Hence, there is no explicit statutory authority to treat a fraudulent transfer proceeding as a non-core proceeding in which the bankruptcy court may submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law to the district court, and the district court would enter final judgment. In response to this argument, the Court of Appeals reasoned that the distinction between core and non-core proceedings was designed to comply with the limits of non-Article III adjudications, and therefore held that such a statutory core proceeding could be treated as a non-core proceeding. Therefore, the summary judgment of the bankruptcy court in this case could be treated as a submission of a conclusion of law, since there were no findings of fact, to the district court, and the review and affirmance by the district court would be treated as entry of a final summary judgment pursuant to the exercise of original jurisdiction by the district court. The Court of Appeals held that this procedure cured the constitutional defect. Further, the Court of Appeals held that even if the defendant in a fraudulent conveyance suit has a right to a hearing in an Article III court, that right is waivable and that Executive Benefits by its conduct waived its rights to an Article III hearing. The Court of Appeals then affirmed the district court. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case to resolve the issue of consent to non-Article III jurisdiction and to address the gap in the statute created by Stern. In its decision, the court assumed, but did not decide, that Stern applied to fraudulent transfer claims, as the Court of Appeals had held, did not decide the issue of consent, but confined itself solely to the question of whether there was a gap in the statute. On the statutory interpretation question, the petitioner had argued that if a bankruptcy court does not have the power under the Constitution to enter a judgment in a court proceeding, the plain language of the statute did not permit the treatment of this statutory core proceeding as a non-core proceeding. Note that this interpretation does not render the trustee in bankruptcy without any avenue of relief. The trustee could still pursue a fraudulent transfer action in the appropriate federal or state court. Nevertheless, the court held that severability doctrine and the specific severability provision in the 1984 Act that created the distinction between core and non-core proceedings refuted the petitioner's plain language argument. True, to treat this fraudulent transfer proceeding as a non-core proceeding requires the court to rewrite the statutory provisions. But the severability doctrine calls for such a rewrite. If a fraudulent transfer proceeding may not, under the Constitution, be treated as a core proceeding, then the language in this statute designating it as a core proceeding is invalid and is simply stricken from the statute. The rest of the statute remains in effect. Thus, a fraudulent transfer proceeding that is defined as a core proceeding in the statute, but that may not be treated as core proceeding under the Constitution, may be a non-core proceeding if it is related to the bankruptcy case, and in the case of a fraudulent transfer cause of action, that would be related to, in this case at least, to the bankruptcy case. The procedural and factual posture of this case permitted this simple and narrow, but nevertheless useful decision. The district court did a de novo review of the bankruptcy court's summary judgment. The petitioner received all of the benefits of an Article III adjudication required by Stern. Although some may be disappointed that the issues of consent were not addressed, I think it was wise for the court to refrain from addressing these more difficult constitutional issues of consent to jurisdiction and the extent of a complied consent when there was such a thin record as in this case.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.